Call the meeting of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division to order. A quorum is present, and members, we're actually going to, sometime during the meeting, try to figure out who actually the membership is on the committee when we're voting. So, Representative Becker Finn, did you review the minutes from March 27th?
I don't have a copy.
Actually, Mr. Chair, I don't have my folder.
Representative Lee.
Mr. Chair, I've reviewed the minutes, and I move approval of the minutes for March 27th.
Representative Lee moves approval of the March 27th minutes. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. Minutes are approved. Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 223 at the direction of the chair. What's the path of the bill?
So, members, with Representative Sundin's bill, what I'd like to do is, when we're done with it, to temporarily lay it on the table and then I'll lay it over, I guess would be the way we propose it. And then it would be my intent when we come to Representative Purcell's committee to attempt to move the bill as an amendment onto Representative Purcell's bill.
That's my motion.
And Representative Fabian, we talked about this, and we can continue to think about it as it's laid over, but that based on the testimony. But we'll lay it over for possible inclusion, and then we may bring that up. And Representative Sundin, you would move that House File 223 be laid over. Please present your bill.
Thank you. That is my motion. 223 is a response to a situation up in my district where the MPCA actually permitted a tire recycling storage facility. We don't know exactly what they're doing quite yet, but they allowed a half million tires to be stored in one particular spot. The neighbors are up in arms, and this is a response to that issue. So just to get the bill in a form that is acceptable to me and the parties and actually the MPCA as well, I would like to offer an author's amendment to delete section 2 of the bill and renumber the effective date. That's my motion.
Representative Sundin moves an oral amendment to delete section 2 and renumber the 3.21 line on the effective date to get the bill in the shape he would like. And we did discuss this, Representative Fabian. Any discussion to that? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Ayes have it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Your oral amendment is adopted.
Thank you.
The bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The 223 addresses the situation. Not being an expert on waste tires or the industry as such, I did reach out to some industry experts, and I have them with me today to, flesh out the intent of the bill.
Mr.
Matthews.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, my name is Dexter Matthews. I'm Vice President of Government Relations and Environmental Affairs for Liberty Tire Recycling. We have two facilities here in the state, St. Martin and Savage. As Representative Sundin indicated, he reached out to us with his concerns, and so we worked with him and believe this is a reasonable bill, reasonable language. The part being looked at today, of course, financial qualifications, is simply language that would have a company that's coming in for a permit to operate, to own and operate a scrap tire recycling facility, to make a demonstration to the agency that they're financially qualified to carry out that operation for the permit for which they seek, so that you would not have a company coming in that is not financially qualified that may end up leaving a great deal of waste on site if they were to become insolvent. And many states have seen that type of issue. They've covered it, tried to cover it with financial assurance, which that helps as well. But financial qualifications is a way for the agency to be able to basically screen companies to make sure that they are financially qualified to own and operate this type of facility, and then you don't have the issues to deal with, hopefully, in the future. There is a provision in the language as well that the agency can ask the state auditor to review the information and give them their opinion on the financial stability of a company that's seeking this type of permit. So I'm happy to try to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you very much.
Are there any questions? Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair, I'm just looking at the bill quickly. Where is the reference to the state auditor in the bill?
Subdivision, second page is on the one that I'm looking at under financial qualification review.
Mr. Chairman, 2.16.
Yep, I got it. Thank you.
Representative Sundin, do you have another testifier?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, welcome. I'm Mark Moss with Liberty Tire Recycling. I'm a regional vice president for the Upper Midwest, and then that said, would look over the sites of St. Martin and Savage, Minnesota. Representative Sundin came to us and really was looking for a perspective from industry, you might say, with the concern of the quantity of whole tires that's been permitted at the site there in northern Minnesota of half a million tires, and asked for some of your input on that. And truly, from the perspective of the general public, at least in our opinion, it's too many fires. I'll give you an example of our facilities. In Savage, we're permitted to store 60,000 tires, passenger tire equivalent, and we could, in some days, do process up to 40,000 tires in a day. So our storage ability is, you might say, a couple days of processing capability. Our St. Martin facility can store up to 50,000 tires, and they would process anywhere from 12 to 15,000 tires a day. So you might say it could be a week of storage. And some of the health issues that are centered around large quantities or large volumes of tires, we don't think it's in the public's best interest to store larger quantities of tires, and as the bill has been presented, it could minimize some of those issues associated with large piles of tires going forward. And those issues basically are this: the mosquito issues with tires being stored for long periods of time. Should we have a catastrophic event, which we'd hope never to have in our state? But the black smoke is something we see, but more so the concern would be the runoff of the unburned tires or the oil. And I just think from our side as industry, and more so even maybe as the public, I think it's in all of our best interest to limit storage of tires, and maybe it be based upon some sort of processing ability a certain company may have. But to store tires, in my opinion, is just not good business. Thank you very much.
So, Sundin, I'm going to ask if the PCA could come down, because there was a fiscal note, and I want to see what happens to that fiscal note based on the deletion of Section 2. Representative Heintzman, maybe go ahead.
Sure. While we are waiting, Mr. Chair, I'll just quickly ask. Just wanted to clarify if this language applies to tire stores, dealerships, et cetera. Who does this apply to, Representative Sundin?
Representative Sundin.
Absolutely not.
Thank you.
Hey, Jeff. Proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dave Benke. I'm the director of the Resource Management Assistance Division at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Bill, as it's changed, deletes the requirements for the agency to do the rulemaking. That was part of the fiscal note requirement They have two FTEs over the course of 2 years to do rulemaking. We still believe that there will be a quarter of an FTE required to do the ongoing evaluation and any changes that occur to facilities and their financial qualification.
Rep. Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Benke, by the deletion of Section 2, can you carry out the intent of the bill as it remains?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the agency would have to look at the staff that we have on board in order to actually do that, if they've got the qualifications to look at the financial viability of the permittee. We currently use engineers and hydrologists to look at the engineering and the qualifications from that standpoint. It does have a provision in order for us to allow other help to do that, and I think that's where we might have the ability to carry it out if we get that assistance.
Thank you. Mr. Benke, that's not real reassuring. We said we might have the ability to carry it out, so I'm just, you know, want to make sure that the bill actually does what the author wants it to do. And I'm hearing some caution in your voice.
Mr. Benke.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the agency doesn't use this type of upfront financial qualification with any of its permitting at the agency. We require financial assurance, and we require the ability of the permittee to fulfill the permit condition. And so that's the way we approach it. And so when I say a little bit of caution, we haven't done this, and I'm not sure that, you know, until we try it, it seems potentially doable, but just a little caution if we have the right folks on board. But there is the assistance from others in the, you know, so I think that might be able to help us there. But we haven't had conversations with them to determine that.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you. And the assistance from others may wind up having a fiscal cost to it as well. And when would you anticipate having those conversations with the author and others and the chair?
Mr. Chairman, members, we certainly can do that and see if there's an impact. There's a small number of facilities that are out there, and so it's not like all of the facilities that we permit would change. This would be just waste tires, but it would be a change in how we approach any of our permitting. So we could certainly do that while the bill is continuing to move.
Representative Fabian, it'll be our...
And that's just to be clear, so that if the bill moves and it's okay the way it is and it winds up then costing you more, you know, after the session is over, you're just going to have to absorb those costs into MPCA's budget?
Mr. Benke.
Mr. Chair and members, the current cost for the agency is a quarter of an FTE, and that's something that we haven't said we could absorb in the fiscal note. This would be an additional cost on what we're currently doing with our waste tire permitting efforts. So I can't speak on behalf of the auditor's office in terms of what they would require, but I would assume that it would be a small number and wouldn't necessarily exceed the cost that we've put out there as a quarter of an FTE.
Representative Fabian will be, well, revise our intent. We would not put this in the policy bill. The motion will be changed to lay it over for possible inclusion in the finance bill. Is there anyone who has any other questions for Representative Sundin or any of the testifiers? Is there anyone in the audience who would? Yes. Welcome.
Chairman Hansen, committee members. My name is Monty Nimi. I run a small business here in Minnesota. We employ about 55 people. We've been in business since 1981, and we recycle about 2 to 2.5 million tires every year. We are in 88 when we first started in the tire recycling, there was 30 waste tire processors in the marketplace cleaning up these old nuisance stockpiles of tires. Our company had a portable shredding operation. We went around to all these farm sites and these outlying areas and cleaned up all these millions of tires that were in our landscape back in the 80s. In 91, we built a facility in the northern suburbs, and we've been processing that 2 million plus tires every year. What I see is this bill is a bill focusing on a tire recycling facility. Currently, there's two waste tire processors in the state, and the startup operation that's having these half million tires in this quarry. I am concerned about putting tires outside in the quarry because obviously they're mosquito breeding, they're open to oxidation from the UV light, they have plenty of oxygen and stuff for fire, so I really think that's a bad business plan. As Mark indicated earlier, if you run an ongoing operation, you need some material on site to be able to process efficiently. Our number happens to be 42,000, but we're permitted to have that, we have financial assurance for, and so this half million number is a pretty scary number. One of my recommendations would be just if you need to have material available, it's just a rule that's currently in place that allows this half million. I think changing that rule down to, you know, 65,000 or 100,000 or something would be an easy fix to get rid of this outdoor storage thing. The other recommendation that we had is when we talk about this bill addressing facilities, waste tire facilities, I think we should be looking at outdoors or portable waste tire facilities that have these tires out in the element. You know, processing facilities like the other two facilities are enclosed facilities where the tires aren't in the elements and the tires get processed very efficiently. So if we're looking at dealing with a problem, I think the outdoors component is a big part of it, and I think the quantity of outdoors is the other part. I can sympathize with the problem. You know, we have a state contract where we go, and we've had since 1990 where every few years they bid it, and we've been holding the contract since 1990 where we go to wherever the state asks us to go, and we have a set price for that region. And so that if a person is looking at having tires cleaned up any place in the state, all the state has to do is say, go here and get them cleaned up, and there's already a pre-bid price with transportation and handling, everything already in place. So as far as having to figure out what is the cost for a cleanup at a nuisance site, that's already in place. And so those are the main things I wanted to share with the committee.
Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify? President Heinzman? No. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify? President Fabian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the testifier talks about the rules and so forth, and that takes me back to our earlier conversation about the rules. By taking Section 2 out of the bill, and maybe Director Benke can come back. If we take away your ability for rulemaking, how are the regulated parties going to know, you know, kind of what the rules are? I think we've got some problems here that are unforeseen, and I appreciate what the chair and the author are trying to do, but I don't know that it gets you to where you want to be. And it may cause other problems. So if we can hear from Mr. Benke again.
Mr. Benke.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, both statutes and Minnesota rules govern waste tire facilities currently. The bill doesn't take away any of those provisions in terms of storage, processing requirements, those kind of things. In fact, waste tires are stored in a way that requires fire lanes and procedures so that they don't have additional risk. The other thing that we currently have in statute is financial assurance requirements or in our rule, and we can adjust that. So the bill had previously required a certain amount. We can still adjust that with the rules, so it doesn't take any thing away from that. What it does do is adds a requirement up front to look at facilities coming into the business and see if they're financially qualified to do that. As Mr. Niemi testified, we had a long time of getting our waste tire problem under control and allowed businesses to come in and develop, add additional equipment, add roofs, things like that. And in this case, the facility that's starting doesn't have all those things, but I'm sure they intend to add as the business grows.
President Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if you, quote, adjust the rules, then through your process, how do you make sure that the regulated parties know what the, quote, new rules are? Through, you know, through this bill and the language that we're changing.
Mr. Chair, members, we'll have to alert the wastewater facilities that the, that there has been a change in statute, and they'll have to comply with that if it applies to them. For facilities that have been in place for, I believe, 10 years, they're not required to submit under this bill in terms of the initial. So it's for new facilities that haven't been operating in the state a long time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Sundin, I appreciate that you have a neighborhood, I'll call it a neighborhood problem. But what I'm concerned about also is the fact that we may be unknowingly, unwittingly, unwantingly squeezing some other small entities out of the market. And I don't know that we have any assurance that, that that's not going to happen either. So my point is why don't we focus on what this one problem is rather than creating new rules and new statutes that may impact another small business that is following all the rules. I understand the conversation that, that you want to have here, but there's potential problems out there.
Certainly. I'd like to return to my initial remarks about the half million tires that are permitted to remain on that site before they're recycled, and that's what precipitated this whole issue. And I really like to thank Mr. Neamey for his comments on the dangers of the storage of that amount of tires, and that's what led us to this solution here. And as far as choking out any small businesses, the mechanical apparatus to shred tires and process tires is very, very expensive. It's not a small business entity. Maybe the transportation of those tires is, but it takes multi-million dollar investments into machinery to process these. So we're not choking out any small businesses by any means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I know as much about recycling tires as hogs do about Sunday school. So, but I do see that I think that this bill has a lot of work to do yet. I can imagine that you need to work with MPCA, Mr. Neamey, and so forth to have an amendment drafted that's going to address the concerns of folks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fabian, I really do appreciate your scrutiny on this. You know, you've pointed out a couple of things that we should be addressing, and willing to work with the agency on this and industry as well. I encourage anybody to go down and check out these recycling facilities that are done correctly. They're safe, they're clean, and all the boxes are checked as far as safety and for the community, the surrounding communities. So with that, I'd encourage a yes vote on this and move it along. We'll need to work on it.
Representative Sundin renews his motion that House File 223 be for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. The bill is laid over. Thank you. Representative Dabney.
Let's get kids off the plate.
Representative Claflin, would you like to move his bill?
I will move House File 2220 for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
Representative Dabney, to your bill.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Claflin. There is a DE1 amendment, Mr. Chair, that I believe is in members' packets.
Representative Claflin, would you like to move DE1?
Yes, I move the DE1.
Oh.
Mr. Chair.
Before we move on, I'd like to make sure that our new members get recognized.
Actually, so we were just waiting
for the official?
We don't have the official.
Okay.
But we know that one of your places new and one of your places where.
Yep.
If we'd like to.
Is it okay for them to vote then?
Yes. So I believe. Is it okay?
Sure.
Sure.
It's not the memo until we get the memo.
We haven't seen the memo yet, but I haven't checked my phone while we've been here. But why don't we introduce the new members?
Well, Nathan, I'll let Nathan introduce himself. How's that sound? And then everybody knows Tama. Or is that Deb? I can't remember.
Kind of looks like Josh.
No.
Representative Nelson.
Hi, I'm Representative Nathan Nelson from 11B, and I was sworn in yesterday. So,
welcome.
Happy to be here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Tama Tice. I represent St. Cloud 14A, and I think I probably know most of you. Thank you.
You probably heard me, Mr. Chair. I said, or is that Deb? See, we have this inside joke about her and Deb Keel looking so much alike.
Welcome to the committee, and you're here on a day where we're going to be doing a lot. So I'm going to assume that you are members of the committee and should be able to volunteer. So. I was hurrying up there. The DE1 apparently is not formally made yet, we had a committee deadline, and so I think we're going to talk about it, and then it'll be here for later action at some point.
Well, Mr. Chair, let's do that then. All right, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. So my comments and the testimony that my testifiers will be providing will be directed to the DE1 amendment, just to be clear to all the members in the public. Mr. Chair and members, we often talk about constructing public policy here, public policy to do this, public policy to do that, and we're constructing this and the like. I see House File 2220 as constructing a table. A table that allows different state agencies a place to meet, to gather, to coordinate, to amplify. The DNR, with their expertise in land and water management and preservation, the Department of Economic Development, bringing in their expertise on business and job growth in the state and worker training, and Minnesota Tourism, who brings their expertise in marketing Minnesota's outdoor recreational opportunities and working with local communities to amplify the local resources and events that they hold. The piece that the fourth piece of that table is users. It's outdoor recreation enthusiasts, which are becoming more diverse in the communities they come from and are engaging in a wider variety of outdoor recreation opportunities. We want Minnesotans and we want tourists to get outdoors in Minnesota and hunt and fish and climb rocks and hike and bike on our trails, visit our state parks, go snowmobiling, paddle our waters, go geocaching, and engage in any number of ways in growing and evolving a number of outdoor activities, supporting local communities and supporting local and national businesses in that sector. The DE1 amendment tightens some of the language from the bill as introduced, highlighting the, I would use the word, catalyzing role that this office could play in the outdoor recreation economy in Minnesota and in outdoor recreation opportunities. I've got three testifiers, Mr. Chair, and it may be a different order than is on your agenda. I would like to start with Sarah Milligan-Toffler from the Children and Nature Network, if that's all right.
Yeah, that's great.
Wonderful.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Dabney, and thank you to the chair and the members. I really appreciate the opportunity to testify before you today. My name is Sarah Milligan-Toffler. I am the executive director of the Children and Nature Network. We are a national nonprofit based here in the Twin Cities, representing over 1,000 members and partners worldwide who are working to address the fact that over the last 40 years, childhood has essentially moved inside. We were founded in 2008 by Richard Louv, who coined a term, nature deficit disorder, that paints a picture of the problem that we're dealing with. this trend really has serious implications for the health and welfare of our children, the future of the outdoor places that we love and cherish, and the future of Minnesota's outdoor recreation economy. And we know that children from low-income communities and children of color have even less access to high-quality outdoor experiences than their peers. And, you know, it raises concerns about health gaps, education gaps, and who will be the future stewards of Minnesota's special places. We are an evidence-based organization, currently working in 20 cities, including the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul and many other cities around the country. We are advancing a growing scientific evidence base that clearly indicates that regular, unstructured time in the outdoors is a cost-effective and time-tested method for supporting children's healthy development. We kind of simplify that by saying spending time in nature helps children be happier, healthier, and smarter. Okay. So how does nature, time in nature support children's health? Well, we know that kids today, and many of us, spend up to 44 hours per week in front of a screen. That's a full-time job last time I checked. And on average, they're spending less than 10 minutes a day playing outdoors. A lack of physical activity has led to serious health problems for too many children, putting them at risk for a lifetime of chronic disease. But kids who spend time in nature, they're more active and physically fit. Playing outdoors promotes core strength, balance, agility, and the development of gross motor skills. Time spent in bright sunlight, we know, is critical for the development of healthy vision. And did you know that over the last 40 years, myopia in children has risen 25% in direct correlation with the move indoors? Time spent in nature helps kids be happier. Multiple studies show that spending time outdoors together strengthen family bonds. And active outdoor families are going to be more likely to support Minnesota's outdoor recreation economy. Spending time in nature reduces stress and anxiety, promotes positive moods, and improves social functioning of children. Just think about how you feel when you take a walk in the woods or around the lake or the river. Unstructured outdoor recreation provides opportunities for children to take risks, develop problem-solving skills, and build self-esteem and a sense of agency. We all want that for our children. And what we know is the greater amount of nature exposure, the greater the benefits. And does nature help children with academic success? The data shows that without a doubt, spending time outdoors improves academic outcomes. Regular physical activity, which tends to be greater in natural environments, improves brain function in children. When kids learn and play in natural environments, we see improved performance in reading, writing, math, science, and social studies. I have data to back all of this up, by the way, which I will provide to the members if you would like to see it. You will find enhanced creativity and executive function, fewer behavior problems, and increased engagement and enthusiasm. On top of all of that, time in nature also helps kids develop a love of outdoor places and develop a conservation effort in children. We all know that we take care of the things that we love. So this is critical for the future of our natural resources. I want to share what the Children in Nature Network has learned from our work to advance equitable access to nature in partnership with municipal government across the country is that we get farther faster when we have a person in place to coordinate efforts across departments and to coordinate the many nonprofit partners in this space. It's not a regulatory role. You talked about sort of setting a table. I think of it more as a pollinator role. And you may have noticed that I sort of dressed like a bee today to help you remember the important role that pollinators play in helping ecosystems thrive and that need to, really have that connection across departments that we spoke about earlier. I'm going to give you an example from right here in St. Paul. We are working with Mayor Carter. He has a person in his office who is working to coordinate Nature Connection activities across departments in the city of St. Paul in collaboration with the Children in Nature Network and the National League of Cities. This is part of a national initiative. The city started by doing an assessment of assets and gaps of Nature Connection across the city. One of the things they determined is that Many immigrant communities were not accessing parks or green space amenities. So they created a partnership between parks and libraries called the Nature Smart Libraries Project that is using libraries, which are being actively used by immigrant residents, as a jumping-off point for nature connections. We've helped them to train youth leaders who support story walks in parks. They've planted pollinator and vegetable gardens, and they use nature backpacks to get families exploring in their local parks. This is the kind of innovative thinking that could be replicated at the state level through this office. Let me be clear. We cannot continue with business as usual if we want to get different outcomes. And this bill provides an opportunity to do something truly different and to truly provide outdoor recreation and education opportunities for a more diverse cross-section of Minnesota's population, which is critical for Minnesota's recreation economy and the health and well-being of our children. Nature access is a proven strategy for reducing gaps in health and academic achievement, and I hope you all agree that all kids deserve to experience the wonder of nature. So on behalf of the Children in Nature Network, I'm pleased to provide our support for the Minnesota Office of Outdoor Recreation to help secure a healthy future for our kids and to assure Minnesota's recreation economy thrives for years to come. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask next Michelle Tigan from the Executive Director of YMCA Camp Pequaguen.
Ms. Tigan.
Thanks, welcome. Jim. Hello. Mr. Chairman and Representatives, as Jim kindly stated, my name is Michelle Tigan, and I'm an Executive Director for one of our 8 overnight camps within the YMCA of the Greater Twin Cities. Thank you for this opportunity, and on behalf of the YMCA of the Greater Twin Cities, the second largest nonprofit in the country, the third largest in the world, not to mention the largest in the state of Minnesota, we believe, and I would like to share with you why, nature should be a strategic tenet in what we do at the YMCA. We know, much like Sarah just indicated, that it's linked to direct outcomes, and we want to link it to direct outcomes in our own strategic plan. We know that it's not only important to the future of our children and families, but that we believe it is a birthright for all generations. We also know that it economically makes sense for our organization. When we talk about equity and access to nature, the data is extremely disparaging for people of color, and Sarah described this, so I won't go into as much detail. But we see this in Richard Rothstein's book, The Color of the Law. The CDC, as Sarah indicated, National Health Studies consistently report staggering outcomes on both physical and mental health in our communities, and the percentage only increases in our communities of color, with obesity rates nearly doubling in African-American communities across the state of Minnesota to 37%. And the average American child's life expectancy is now shrinking to the lowest average since World War II, to an average age of 77, shorter than our current parents. Yet doctors, universities like the U of M, Harvard, are releasing data monthly about the positive outcomes associated with getting people outdoors. At the YMCA, we see over 350,000 children per summer in our YMCA programs, all of which have a significant nature component because we believe that it's important. 100,000 of those children come to our overnight camps. And our families are signing up more and more and more. Our ratios currently for Camp Pequaguen is that we have increased over 13% in 1 year in people trying to get into our overnight camps. We know that this is true in our family camps as well, as the YMCA, for the first time since the 1930s, is opening a new camp, Camp Northern Lights, this summer to meet the needs of families, because YMCA Camp De Nord's numbers were not allowing as many families to get outdoors as would like. It doesn't matter whether you're 8 or 82, white or a person of color, nature is a proven remedy in all of our communities for health, happiness, and bridging the equity gap. We believe nature is a birthright for all, and our leaders both locally and across the U.S. are investing in providing nature-based opportunities for this reason. For example, we work right with the Children of Nature Network in communities across the country, including San Francisco and Austin. We've sat in as the YMCA to help draft and build the Children's Outdoor Bill of Rights. We've helped to promote the Green Schoolyard movement, increased investment in nature preschools, including within the YMCA, and work with the Children of Nature Network to promote nature libraries. This is not a new concept, but one that has dramatically shifted. When we think about in the 1940s, most kids played in the 2-mile radius around their home. That's now changed from data in 2018 to less than their front doorstep. Our children don't know how to get outside because we're constantly embracing technology instead of the green spaces. Not to mention that the green spaces that are available to many kids in communities that are not affluent are not places that you would allow your children to play. The changing demographics of the state of Minnesota and the communities across the YMCA that we serve need you to invest in this bill to create real, equitable solutions for all to have access to nature. At the YMCA, in the last 2 years, we have elevated nature to live within our strategic plan, and we encourage you to think about doing the same to create opportunities for recreation, to give opportunities for nonprofits to bridge the opportunity to work together, and we believe that this bill will do just that. Thank you, members, for the opportunity today.
Thank you. And last, Mr. Chair, Andrew Pappas from the Outdoor Industry Association.
Mr. Pappas.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you to the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today and speak to you all about the importance of this legislation. My name is Andrew Pappas. I'm the manager of state and local policy for Outdoor Industry Association. We're the National Trade Association for outdoor retailers, suppliers, manufacturers across the outdoor $887 billion outdoor recreation industry. On behalf of OIA and our 1,300 members nationwide, I want to express our support for HF 2220, the bill to create a Minnesota Outdoor Recreation Office. Minnesotans live here and tourists visit because of the myriad of world-class recreation opportunities the state provides, from hiking to hunting, biking, boating, fishing, canoeing, ATVing, RVing, snowmobiling, cross-country skiing, and more. You name it, and the state is rich in resources and opportunities to do it. These activities are more than just a way to spend the weekend. They're an economic force. Every year in Minnesota, outdoor recreation generates $16.7 billion in annual consumer spending, contributes $1.4 billion a year in state and local tax revenue, and creates 140,000 Minnesotan jobs. It also helps grow local economies, which can be especially helpful in rural areas to diversify their economic base. For example, Duluth being understood as an outdoor mecca, or Ely, whose small businesses thrive in part due to a strong outdoor tourism economy. Not only does outdoor recreation support healthy economies, it supports healthy communities. Time in the outdoors, time in nature, is categorically good for people and communities in multiple dimensions, as you've heard. It's good for mental and physical health, for childhood development, and school readiness. It develops a sense of stewardship for our natural places to help make sure these places are here for our children, grandchildren, and beyond. But despite all of these benefits of outdoor recreation and despite investments in conservation and recreation, we find ourselves at a crossroads. People actually are not getting outside as much as they might once have. OIA data shows that participation is flat. State investments are under-leveraged, taxpayer dollars are not optimized, and increased coordination is needed. That is why we support this bill. Minnesota can benefit from the creation of an outdoor recreation sector who can break down silos, support and promote the state's outdoor tourism economy, and be a convening and coordinating force amongst all agencies that currently exist in Minnesota and do good work to support the industry and the state. A basic principle of any outdoor excursion is the importance of everyone coming together to achieve a common goal. This office can be that convener, bringing everyone together, identifying and utilizing their individual strengths to achieve the common goal of making Minnesota's outdoors accessible for all, promote tourism to the state, and grow businesses and create jobs in rural and urban communities alike. If created, a Minnesota Outdoor Recreation Office would be the revolutionary 13th state with an existing office or task force that recognizes the importance of outdoor recreation as an economic driver and contributor to the overall health of citizens. From Colorado to Washington to North Carolina, states continue to support these offices because they have seen the benefits of a convening body and an individual that industry can turn to with questions or for connections. They've been an ear on the ground to hear what communities need most and help address those needs. They have also helped attract and cultivate businesses, promote tourism, and be a promoter of the state events across the country, as well as be a person to convene with other existing offices to coordinate priorities and share best practices. This office would be an important investment in highlighting outdoor recreation as something that creates jobs, promotes entrepreneurship, helps people from all backgrounds across the state, and gets outside, increases access, and brings people together. all of this, which results in a stronger economy, and identifies recreation not only as an important part of Minnesota's heritage, but an important part of its economic future. That's why today I hope the committee seizes this opportunity to invest in this future part of Minnesota's economy and support HF 2220. Thank you again to the chair, and thank you again to the committee.
Any questions for any of the testifiers? Representative Heisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could the testifier mention the name of the organization that he represents? I slipped on.
Outdoor Industry Association.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm struggling a little bit because I'm not unfamiliar with my district. I have one of the most recreationally, if not the most recreationally diverse district in the entire state, and I'm not familiar with the organization. And up until this point, I've received not one email, not one phone call, not one text referencing this bill or any support for or against the bill. So I'm trying to come to the table with a bit of an open mind. Is there a reason that I'm not hearing from any of the folks that you represent other than you today at the testifier's desk?
I think we work to be a convening voice, representative, and coming and building support. I mean, one of the items you have in front of you is a growing list of members and businesses in the state, and we're continuing to cultivate that, educate, and bring people together to educate about this office and this legislation.
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, as Mr. Pappas just indicated, there is a letter that I hope is in your packet indicating support for this from the Alumacraft Boat Company, American Alpine Club, Ask of Finlayson, Gear Junkie, Hilltop Camper and RV, Midwest Water Sports, the Outdoor Alliance, the Outdoor Industry Association, People for Bikes, Paragus Northwoods Company Incorporated, REI Co-op, the Conservation Alliance, Vista Outdoor, and Xterra. In addition, I do know that the National Marine Manufacturers Association is engaged, and the, I'm not going to get their name right, but the National RV Manufacturers, whatever their industry association's name is.
Representative Heinzman, did you have a follow-up? Or?
For the bill author, if we can.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I see at this would be the very bottom of the bill, page 2.17. We still have an open appropriation. Do we know what that number is yet?
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Heitzman, we do not. Mr. Pappas has been good enough to provide kind of a scan nationally of the monies appropriated across the country for similar offices, and it varies from a low in the state of Washington of $175,000 annually to a high in Colorado of $370,000 annually. So that provides some parameters.
Representative Heisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dabney, last time we heard the bill in the policy committee, there was a lot of discussion around a number of the agencies, and I think that on line 2.6, subdivision 3, we see that Explore Minnesota Tourism and Departments, moving on to the following lines of natural resources, health, transportation, employment, and economic development must cooperate with the Minnesota Outdoor Recreation Office. When we discussed some of these agencies, when we discussed this bill the last time, some of these agencies were in the room, and there was definitely some lukewarm responses to how their agencies may be required to cooperate. Have you spent any time working with them to try to figure out where they are, what they need to earn that support for this bill? I'm not always advocating for an agency's support, but I'd be curious if you've been working to try to get that relative to these issues that they were, like I mentioned, we're a little bit lukewarm to the idea of this new agency being created that they have to respond to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Heitzman, I had a very good conversation with Commissioner Stroman of the DNR, and I think it's fair to say that she shares the goal of promoting outdoor recreation and making opportunities more accessible. She would like to continue those conversations. I've also met with the Director of Minnesota Tourism. Those would probably be the two key players in this, and I would think it's fair to say that his sentiments are similar.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what I'm driving at, Representative Dabney, have we moved from they're neutral to the bill to they support it, or has nothing really changed? I'm not hearing one way or the other yet.
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Heinzman, I don't want to go, I don't want to speak for folks that I can't. They're engaged. They're interested in continuing the conversation. And I think, your last bill was about continuing a conversation about recycled tires. This is a continuing a conversation about building our outdoor recreation industry and building out equitable outdoor recreation opportunities.
Not exactly the same, but.
What do you do with the table? You gather people, break a little bread, have a little conversation.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Back to Representative Heinzman's questions about Subdivision 3 on page 2. You talked about talking to DNR and tourism, but what conversations have you had with health, transportation, and economic development?
Mr. Chair, I've not had the opportunity to follow up with those agencies at this time.
Is there someone here from those agencies that want to testify? Did you ask them to come and testify?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I did not. It's a publicly noticed meeting, and they could come. I would welcome that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I don't know. Usually when I have a bill that names other agencies, I invite them to come, but that's your decision to make. In the Senate, the fiscal note on this bill was, I believe, $6 million. Mm-hmm. Have you seen that fiscal note? And then the question is have you requested a fiscal note?
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, usually we only do one fiscal note at a time, so I have not since the agencies developed that fiscal note. If you read the fiscal note, the overwhelming percentage of that was entirely scalable according to Minnesota Tourism, to whatever resources would be available.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, but the fact of the matter is it's a $6 million fiscal note, and if you, So to your letter that you have here, it's dated today's date. Mm-hmm. This, the amendment that we're talking about was posted yesterday at 3:19 p.m., and this is dated today, and these companies are listed as supporting the bill. Are they supporting the bill as it was originally written, or have you had conversations with them to make sure that it's clarified that you're working off the DE amendment and they support that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, advocates have been engaged with these different businesses, and I don't know the exact timeline. I think what the business community is looking for is to catalyze opportunities to grow businesses and grow jobs in the outdoor recreation sector in Minnesota. I think that's a positive for the Minnesotans who work for those businesses. I think it's positive for those businesses, and I think it's positive for the communities that they're located in.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So who are the advocates that have been in contact with these companies since the amendment was posted?
Mr. Chair, I'm sure that Representative, sorry, buddy. Mr. Pappas could speak to that.
Mr. Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There was outreach done last evening after the amendment was filed, and to receive confirmation that all these members on the letter are still in support after the amendment. So there has been conversation over the past 24 hours.
Thank you. And Representative Dabney, at the last hearing that we had, you mentioned a manufacturer that I can see out of the back door of my house supported this bill. I see they're not on this list. And then also I think you mentioned the one in Thief River Falls. What is their position on this bill now?
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, I believe I referred to them as examples of important employers in the state of Minnesota. I've not spoken to either of them, nor have I portrayed that I had, but that they were the sort of employers and businesses in the state that are key to outdoor recreation, and we wanted to help. This office could help build more outdoor recreation business opportunities.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate the, you know, what we're trying to do here with this, but I do know that the one that I can see out of my back window does not support the bill. So, and that's, it's kind of too bad, simply because we do want to do these things, but, you know, for me personally, with a $6 million price tag and creating another layer of government, I think there's better ways to accomplish this. I appreciate what you're trying to do for outdoor recreation. When you, I've got a couple of empty seats in my car if you want to ride up to Rosa with me for the weekend and jump on a snowmobile yet. We still have lots of opportunities for that. We do all kinds of stuff up there, but I just think that this isn't the way to do it. And I am interested in listening to what Explore Minnesota Tourism and the DNR have to say.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian. Of course, we're the legislature. We get to scale bills, and that impacts fiscal notes.
I have Representative Lewick, Representative Becker Finn, Representative Eklund, Heinzman. I'd like to hear from DNR. I'd like to hear from tourism, and I'd like to get the LCCMR bill out of here before we adjourn for recess. Okay. So, Representative Lewick.
Is that a hint?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess for Representative Dabney, I noticed on the DE amendment, and after hearing again the excellent testimony from Ms. Milligan Toffler about how important outdoor activities are to children in their learning process, their growing up process, I'm still looking. I don't see that there's any interagency cooperation spelled out here between the Department of Education and this new position. I think we had this discussion the last time this we heard this bill. So you still decided not to include Department of Education as an integral part? I mean, I've heard that testimony twice now, and I quit marking after about 20 times I heard child and youth and and benefits. So what? Why aren't they required to be part of this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lewick, education happens in many places, not necessarily in schools, and the Department of Education is responsible primarily for the public schools in Minnesota. In fact, as was testified, key educational benefits come from being outside the school building rather than inside the school building. And this, an Office of Outdoor Recreation would give opportunities for families, advocates, and organizations and businesses that work with children to get them outdoors a place to engage.
Well, let me do my math now. I think I heard a comment about 40 hours a week in front of a screen. I'm not sure how much that involves the child being inside of a school building, but let's just say they're particularly at the younger ages, that's probably close to zero. So then give me a number here with school bus rides, another 35, 40, 50 hours a week. So now we're up to 90 hours a week. We're talking about first through fourth graders, for example, at least where I live, where they've got some got a long bus ride before they get to school. I just don't get it. Why you even... speak to support outdoor recreational programs at Minnesota educational institutions. It seems like if they've got the kids already in the building for 40 hours a week, you'd want to at least make them part of this. But obviously, I don't see that. Are you familiar with the Explore Minnesota Council?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lewick, I understand the language referencing educational opportunities in this bill differently than you do. If you look, for instance, at the state of Colorado, their Office of Outdoor Recreation works with higher education institutions to make sure that there are educational programs, both on the associate level and on the bachelor's level, that train and prepare people to work in the outdoor recreation industry. I met over the weekend with a small businessman who, I don't know, there's a fancy word for it, I'm sure, but a guy who sells boats, big, expensive boats, as a matter of fact. He told me the greatest limitation to his expanding his business is workforce. He needs technicians who know how to work on boat motors. And the technicians that he uses now to work on boat motors, he's paying six-figure incomes because they're scarce and highly prized. There is a lack of programs in Minnesota to train those people. So engaging our higher education institutions in terms of workforce development for the outdoor education or outdoor recreation industry builds jobs and expands businesses.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for that. I'm talking about the young people that our previous testifier talked about. But again, are you familiar with the Explore Minnesota Council?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lewick, some, not as much as I think I'm about to.
You have any idea how many members are on that council?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lewick, if I recall correctly, Mr. Carlson testified in the last committee hearing 26.
Mm-hmm. Last time I checked, it's 24, but that's close.
Give it to me. Come on.
And, they're appointed by the governor. They're on four-year terms, and the Explore Minnesota executive director is the chairman of that. So, I don't know. I don't see those folks in here, and that's a pretty good cross-section of all of, they're into recreation up to their ears. So are they involved in this or not? I just look at this going, geez, covers a lot of ground, but I think you're missing a lot.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lewick, their chair is the office is located within Minnesota Tourism in the bill, and their chair is part of the bill as well. So, yes, they're very present in the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. They're present. I guess if a busy man can run between this office and that office and carry the communication back and forth. I mean, we've got these folks meet and do a lot of good work for the state of Minnesota. And so, it looks to me like this DE amendment really doesn't change much of anything. You've left out education, and I'm talking about the K-12 element that does house our kids for a huge amount of time every week. I don't see talk about promoting enhanced public health, but I don't see the health department in here either. So, again, if you're going to do this wide sweeping process here, it just seems like you can't have it both ways. You're going to do this and that, but you're not going to require those agencies to actually cooperate.
President Dabney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lewick, Minnesota science standards include standards about studying nature outdoors. Many upper elementary and middle school students, as part of their schooling, go to the environmental learning centers around the state or to camps. My own children did we'll call it a week, three nights, something like that, up by the Boundary Waters at a YMCA camp, experiencing nature and studying nature there. Currently, the state is redoing their science standards. I'm pretty confident that those standards encouraging students to understand Minnesota's unique ecosystems by getting out and exploring them rather than reading a book inside or, worse yet, surfing a website will remain.
Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So a couple things. I think one of the good things that this bill does is it brings groups together. So we have nonprofits, we have youth organizations, we have the industry. I encourage others to, if you just, while you're sitting here on your phones, look up the Outdoor Industry Association, and the list of members is extensive. So I think, and when we have the chemistry council or any other folks in here, we don't necessarily ask them to list every single company that they represent. So I mean, it's helpful to have some of these groups listed on the letter. I think, too, as to the discussion of different administrative departments that this might touch, I mean, what that really gets to is how important this issue is, because it really does touch almost every part of our lives, whether we're talking, I mean, if it touches commerce, it touches human services, it touches all of those things. We could, just about any agency would stand to have something to gain from their employees and really making Minnesota a better place to live. So I think it's actually kind of instructive in pointing to how important advocating for outdoor recreation is, and I think it's almost a little misleading. You know, we call it recreation, but it's really more to that. You know, I guess recreation is playing video games too, but a trip to the Boundary Waters is a more impactful type of recreation than some other types. So I'm proud to be on the bill, and I think it's a good bill on an important issue, and I thank folks who've come to testify on this today.
Thank you.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Pappas, when's the last time you were in Ely?
It's one of the places I hope to visit.
Okay, well, I just want to correct your testimony. Oh, sorry, Mr. Chair. Correct your testimony a little bit. I think you should, before you include a city in your testimony, should maybe talk to their city and the EDA to find out if they agree with your words. We've had two businesses closed out in the last week, so that's not exactly thriving.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Becker Finn's comments, this touches everything I think are very relevant. And to that point, Mr. Chair, is this bill going to make it to government ops? This is obviously going to have a pretty significant impact on how Explore Minnesota Tourism operates and other agencies relevant to government operations, I think, would be a good place for this to go, just checking.
Representative Heinzman, so the tourism department is in our this budget area in this committee, and we have responsibility for it. And the office is being created within the tourism department, so it is in the jurisdiction of this committee. The motion is to lay it over for possible inclusion, so it would not be going to government operation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The follow-up would just simply be, thank you. I think that it certainly does have a significant impact, and I think in most cases something like this would be expected to go to government operations.
Representative Lee, and then Representative Backer, and then I'd like to have the DNR and tourism on deck to at least comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Daphne, for bringing this forward too. And I really appreciate the language that you put on here for the purpose, and the first point is to work towards equitable and inclusive access to the outdoors. And I think that really speak to your testifiers and how they're talking about how, you know, children of colors and low income children do not have access to the outdoors. And those are the constituents that I represent in my district in the city of Minneapolis. And just quickly to the point about education and, you know, out of class time during the summertime, they're not inside of our classroom building. So what are we doing to support them or to provide them an educational opportunity? I know that within the city of Minneapolis, we have the Park Board who do provide programming, educational programming for our students during the summer too. And so I think that we do not, you know, I agree with you that we do not necessarily have to be within the institution of an educational building or a school to really have educational programming. So I really just want to say thank you for bringing this forward, and I'm glad to be a co-author of the bill.
Thank you. President Dabney.
Thank you, Representative Lee.
Representative Backer.
Yeah, Chair, I would like to make a motion to amend the amendment and have this amend the motion to move this to government op. This has a significant impact with Explore Minnesota.
It's been moved to move it to Ways and Means with a recommendation to go to a government operation. Can only go to Ways and Means because we're a division of Ways and Means.
Okay.
With a recommendation.
With a recommendation to move it there. That would. Thank you, Chair. That would be my motion.
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Backer, I think the Chair spoke articulately that the Minnesota Tourism is within the jurisdiction of this committee. I'm a big one on respecting the jurisdictions of committees. I'd ask for a no vote.
Follow up, and I appreciate that there, Chair. My concern is I'm not debating that this is not, we have some jurisdiction over here. What I'm debating and what I'm concerned about is we're really changing the operation of an agency, and that's government operation, and they should also have a say in it. That's why we have the committees, to be efficient as best as possible and also to get total transparency. So I agree with your statement that we have some jurisdiction, but we do not have the full jurisdiction because we're affecting an agency significantly. So I would ask for a yes vote. Thank you.
Any further discussion?
Roll call.
Roll call being requested. Clerk has to get the paper out.
Hanson.
No.
Claflin.
No.
Fabian.
Yes.
Backer.
Yes.
Becker Finn.
Dalween.
That's no. Eklund.
No.
Fisher.
Nope.
Green.
Yes.
Heintzman.
Yes.
Lee.
No.
Lewick.
Yes.
Morrison.
No.
New.
Oops.
Need to update my roll call vote sheet. Purcell.
No.
Sandell.
No.
Sundin. Wagenius. Nelson.
Yes.
Tice.
Yes.
Seven ayes, ten noes. The motion does not prevail. Any other questions for the testifiers? Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify for or against the bill? Do the agencies want to make a statement? A quick statement. Mr. Edmund.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is John Edmund. I'm the director of Explore Minnesota. Just make a brief little statement here. First of all, we do, as Explore Minnesota, we support the concept of this bill and promoting the outdoors. That's kind of the heart of what we do in promoting all of Minnesota. Minnesota is definitely known for its outdoors. So we really endorse the idea behind this bill. Explore Minnesota does a lot to market the outdoors. We do a lot to work with the Department of Natural Resources. And we do many of the things that are in the bill. In my agency, it's primarily the marketing. A couple comments. First of all, no matter what the fiscal note is on that, we would encourage that does not come out of the base of Explore Minnesota, because that would detract from all of our programs that we're doing to promote all different destinations of the state. In terms of the size of the fiscal note for that, there's a lot of assumptions that had to be made here. There's a lot of duties that are listed. Marketing is what we can speak to. That's the biggest cost. But we don't really have an assessment right now. If we're talking marketing just to Minnesotans, we're talking regionally, we're talking nationally, we're talking four seasons, what exactly is that? So we had to make some assumptions, and there would also be some work with some PR. And there's a lot of different elements involving a lot of different agencies in this bill. So as a bottom line, I think the concept is really good. There does need to be some more collaboration with other agencies. We work a lot with Department of Natural Resources. I have not just talked about this with other agencies, but I want to pledge to you, Mr. Chairman, and the committees that no matter what the direction of this bill is, that we will work with the other agencies to come up with an appropriate solution, because promoting the outdoors is so important to Minnesota. So that's it.
Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. The DNR shares the goals of promoting outdoor recreation and making outdoor opportunities more accessible to all Minnesotans. To that end, we support the concept of this bill, but have some remaining questions on the specific language. Commissioner Stroman spoke with the author, as he mentioned, and they agreed to continue the conversation on the bill language with the various stakeholders.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the
bill author and the testifiers. And my question is to the bill author, but the testifiers that are there now would certainly be welcome to weigh in. But Representative Dabney, what do you envision the new bureaucracy you're creating will be able to accomplish that Explore Minnesota and the DNR failed to do?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Green, I'm not talking about failure. I'm talking about catalyzing. I'm talking about bringing people to the table to work, to coordinate across jurisdictions, across agency silos, to enhance the work that DNR is doing in managing our lands and waters, and tourism is doing in marketing, as well as bringing in folks like the Department of Employment and Economic Development to look at how can we grow this sector. Nationally, the outdoor recreation sector is a growing business opportunity. It would be great to see Minnesota share in that.
Representative Green.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, if you look at what Explore Minnesota and DNR have, even in the ways of getting kids out there doing everything that you're saying that you want to do, or at least they're trying to, and so you say they're not failing, but yet you want to come in and tell them how to do it differently, but so you kind of are insinuating that they are failing in doing it, and if they are, why not, opposite of the point of Explore Minnesota, why not take the money from these agencies to fund this? Because otherwise, you're just going to start draining other funds. And if you're trying to accomplish the same goal anyway, and if you don't believe that what they're doing is working, then why not look for the money from their budgets instead of general fund?
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, again, the only implication of the failure is there's no implication of failure from me or my testifiers. I think we can do more. And I think that's an opportunity that Minnesota should grab, as I believe Mr. Pappas said, 12 other states have already done.
Well,
President Green.
Mr. Chair, then just a statement. I think that you're contradicting yourself. I believe that, with the programs that are out there, if you don't think they're working, then that's obviously a failure. And it doesn't really seem like you have another way to go. You just want to do something different. And I think that if we're going to spend more money, then we should be spending it on the programs that are already there. Thank you.
Representative Dabney, any closing remarks?
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the time and the healthy discussion. I introduced the bill talking about it being a construction project. Anybody who's been involved in a home remodel knows the construction project goes on. And I would ask that we continue this conversation. I've made that commitment to some of the agencies involved already, and I look forward to continuing that. Thank you all for your time and attention today.
Representative Claflin.
I'll renew my motion to lay House File 2220 over for possible inclusion.
Bill is laid over.
Thank you very much.
Chair Hansen, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House File 2032 be moved to the Ways and Means Committee.
And I believe you have an amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. House File 2032 is the LCCMR bill. As was noted in the last committee hearing when we were talking about this, there is our funds that are available in there because there is no longer a need for debt service. So the A3 amendment, which I would move the A3 amendment to get the bill in the shape I would like, allocates that money. In addition, it removes the an appropriation for $1.5 million for wastewater treatment grants and provides for loans for wastewater treatment. And I could go through the changes or I'll take any questions.
Are there any questions before we walk through it? You'd like to.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A3 amendment
adds $636,000 for a native bee survey. This is the Patty Akam, Representative Akam bill that we heard in committee that was a proposal for the LCCMR that did not make the cut. It adds $250,000 for increasing diversity in environmental careers. This is a bill, this is a cut that had occurred, I think the last two times there was LCCMR proposals trying to encourage diversity in environmental careers. It adds $780,000 for accelerating the non-game wildlife program. This is a cut that had occurred in last year's bill. It increases the Minnesota State Parks and State Trails in holdings acquisitions by $1 million in FY 2019 and $1.907 million in FY 20. It increases the Minnesota State Trails development by appropriating $124,000 in FY 19 and increasing from $5 million to $8.247 million in FY 20. It increases the Britton Peak to Lutzen Mountain Bike Trail project by $50,000. It increases the Birch Lake Recreation Area Campground project by $350,000. It adds $3.406 million for Native Prairie Bank conservation easements and landowner assistance. It adds $200,000 to the City of Rainier to enhance and increase public access to Rainy Lake by constructing an ADA-compliant recreational parking lot, an ADA-compliant public restroom, and an AIS boat wash station. It adds $3,300 to the LCCMR grants management system. This is a provision that was discussed and approved in the LCCMR Executive Committee meeting a week ago, Monday. It extends two projects, the Southeastern Minnesota Subsurface Drainage Impacts and Groundwater Recharge from 2015 and the Protection of the State's Confined Drinking Water Aquifers Phase 2 from 2017. Ms. Nash could provide more details on those two item extensions if there are questions. It eliminates $1.5 million for wastewater treatment grants and allows for up to $6.5 million from the corpus of the trust to be invested in loans from the through the PFA's Clean Water Revolving Loan Fund. It deletes the language that allows for money from the trust fund to be used for water pollution control in small cities. And that is the A3 amendment.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Chair Hansen, on page 3 of your amendment, under the on line 3.22, you said, I believe that you said on the tape, I just want to correct, you said 33,000, and I think you want to correct that number for
3,300,
the
tape. $330,000, yep. Excuse me. $330,000, and this is for Representative Heinzman or Representative Tice could. This has been an ongoing discussion relating to IT issues with the LCCMR.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To Representative Hansen's comment, there has been a quite a discussion about making some enhancements to our system, and these are changes to the IT system that I definitely support and want to put that on the record. I do also want to bring some attention to line 3.28 and 3.27. Deleting lines 15 through 30 is the, just quickly I want to mention, there's been a lot of discussion over the years about changing the LCCMR bill. And I just want to point out that a change is being made, and in this particular case, Representative Hansen, I think that the water infrastructure loans change, although it will be considered significant by the LCCMR committee, I think there's something to be talked about, especially going forward, and there may be some both some positive and negative, but I think that it's probably a discussion that's definitely worth having.
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And when we had the executive committee meeting of the LCCMR, and Representative Tice could chime in, there was really no consensus on where to go forward except that we needed to continue having the conversation about some of these issues.
Are there other questions? Seeing none, there's a technical amendment by Ms. Taylor.
Madam Chair, members, on the A3, if a technical amendment could be incorporated before moving it, on line 2.6, line 9 should read line 29.
I would incorporate that technical change. And I would move the A23 amendment, or the A3 amendment.
All those in favor of the A3 amendment as amended, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for or against the bill? Mm-hmm. Any other questions from the committee? Done.
I would renew my motion that it go to House File 2032 as amended, be sent to the Ways and Means Committee.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion prevails.
So, members, we do have room 5, and Mr. Strohmeyer is posting 5 o'clock to reconvene or half an hour after session adjourns, whichever comes first. And I know we have several bills left. I wish we didn't have to do it, but I'm going to move for a recess, and we'll come back half hour after session if that's first, or 5 p.m. So we are in recess. I call the meeting of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division back to order. And we're going to go with Representative Purcell because it's Bemidji Day and he has some Bemidji things, I think, right?
Representative Purcell. Got a couple things going on this evening, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your accommodation.
Representative Fabian.
Doesn't he have to wear a Bemidji vest?
I don't know where the plaid went.
I was wearing it all day, Mr. Chair, and Representative Fabian, and I got hot, man. So that's the name of that joint.
Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair, from what I know, you've always been hot.
Well, don't spread it around there. My wife will get just madder than hot. So.
Madder than
I
hot.
I think we got to go with the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've got an amendment as well, Mr. Chair. It is the A6 amendment.
And I think...
Wait, no. Two amendments.
Yep, so...
we've got an A5
Purcell,
amendment.
The A5 is mine. The A6 is, I think, something you've worked out on beaver trapping. So do you want to take that one first?
I'll certainly take the A6, Mr. Chair, and... this is language you've been working on with the Minnesota DNR here, and I guess I'd take any questions. It's pertinent to trapping beaver that addressed in the DNR policy bill here, and so this is the language that has been agreed upon, Mr. Chair.
Representative Purcell, let's go through the formalities here. Representative Purcell moves that House File 1656 be recommended to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Representative Purcell, would you like to move the A6 amendment?
I would like to move the A6 amendment, please.
And Representative Purcell, the A6 amendment you just did. Is there any discussion on the A6 amendment? Commissioner Meyer and then Representative Fabian. Mr. Chairman,
members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. The A6 amendment is somewhat of a work in progress due to wanting to get the amendment in before the deadline yesterday. The piece that we are working with the Trappers Associations on this and the counties, actually, the piece we're missing is language that would allow the trapper to retain the carcasses, which you will see language on that as soon as we have an opportunity to amend this again. But what this language does, you'll see, it clarifies the tagging requirement on 1.3 to 1.4. And then basically the language on 1.7 to 1.10 just clarifies that a person may not remove a beaver dam when you're going to change the ordinary high water mark. So if there's an existing beaver dam, for example, you cannot remove that without going through the processes in 103G.245. So you would need to work with adjacent landowners and things like that. But any beaver dam that's not historically part of a dam, so to speak, holding water body, but holding water back, would be able to be done without the permit. So you can see the damage, the dam would change or diminish historical water levels, course current, or cross section of public waters, which is current law. You can't destroy those types of barriers.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Meyer, how was the historical level determined?
It would be an ordinary high water mark. There's some water bodies that have OHWs that are from part of a huge beaver dam system. So we would want to make sure that we're following public water law and making sure that we're following those procedures to get through that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm just curious, anxious to make sure that conversations continue with counties and townships and so forth so that we get to, I don't understand why beavers continue to be such a problem, but.
Mr. Chairman, it's important that we do this in a fashion that we do not bring the Minnesota Friends of Beavers or something to the legislature concerned of how we're trying to manage beaver for roads and timber and things like that. So we have to be conscious of taking care of the conservation side of what beavers do as well.
Any further discussion? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, beavers and beets, I guess, huh?
Sounds like a great book.
Any other discussion? All those in favor of the A6 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Those nay? The ayes have it. The amendment is adopted. I would move the A5 amendment. And members, the A5 amendment is adding four DNR policy bills that were previously heard in Environment and Natural Resources Policy Committee. They would be House File 1886, 1880, 1857, and 1472. Commissioner Meyer, if you want to maybe just, it's the silica sand regulation duties modified, the Sandel bill, the Sandsteed permanent school fund compensation authority clarified, the Hansen citizen oversight committees extended, and the Claflin public waters electronic transmission of certain information provided.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for offering this amendment. The DNR does support this, obviously. These bills have been heard in the policy committee. They are non-controversial, technical in nature. The budget oversight committee extension, for example, is just extending the budget oversight committee, which we still hope to have before this body at some point in time for another 5 years. The written notification is just clarifying the statute that we can take electronic notice as well. Silica sand is clarifying language that was previously passed, and the permanent school fund bill provides us more tools in the toolbox to deal with our fiduciary responsibilities in managing trust lands.
Is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. The A5 amendment is adopted. Is there anyone in the audience who'd like to testify for or against the bill as amended? Any questions from members? Representative Purcell, any closing remarks?
Just thank you for your consideration this evening. We've talked about this bill several times through the process, and we're getting where we need to go, so appreciate support.
Representative Purcell renews his motion that House File 1656 as amended be recommended to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. The motion prevails. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Eklund. Representative Eklund moves that House, would you like to move the bill?
I'd like to move my House File 1454 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Eklund, I believe you have an author's amendment.
I do, Mr. Chair, the A19-30301. And that's pretty much just changing some technical terms in the bill, so I want to offer that amendment to get it the shape I'd like it to be, Mr. Chair.
Any questions about the amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. The amendment is adopted. Representative Eklund, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I'm here to present House File 1454, the Off-Road Vehicle Touring Routes and Trails Bill, better known as the Border-to-Border Bill. I'm excited about this bill. The prospects for a brand new state-of-the-art touring trail that will bring new energy and new users into our state and national forests, while bringing new and needed revenues to deep rural areas of the state. Border to Border defines an alignment that will allow highway licensed vehicles to travel from the shores of Lake Superior to the North Dakota border on legal roads. Phase two of the program invites local governments that are on or close to the route to pitch Minnesota Four-Wheeler Drive Association and DNR on loops to local landmarks, restaurants, campgrounds, and historic places. The bill funds a Border to Border administrator to conduct the phase two part of the program, a statewide off-road vehicle master plan, and a maintenance fund that allows federal, state, and tribal and local governments to make a claim if impacts on a given system can be attributed directly to additional border-to-border volume. There is a new appropriation of $200,000 annually from the ORV account to DNR Parks and Trails for additional work necessary to administer the route and other projects the Minnesota Four-Wheel Drive Association has in the queue. Mr. Chair and members, this is a good project that is, and this is an activity worth watching and supporting. I hope you all had a chance to review the video I sent earlier today and the letters of support from two business owners and county commissioners in Appleton and Gilbert, where Minnesota Four-Wheel Drive Association has recreated for more than a decade. To testify, I have Minnesota Four-Wheel Drive Association lobbyist Dan Larson and Angela Hinckley representing her club, Ladies Rock Off Road Club. Angela is also a Minnesota Four-Wheel Drive Association board member. The DNR supports the bill and is available for questions, Mr. Chair and members, and I will turn it over to my testifiers.
Mr. Larson.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you Representative Eklund for bringing this bill before you. Thanks for the opportunity. We're excited about the opportunity. The off-road vehicle touring routes are the next big thing in outdoor recreation. So I'm happy to be working with this group, and especially on this project, which is a high-profile project that starts at the shores of Lake Superior and continues all the way across, as Representative Eklund said, to the North Dakota border at Pembina at the international border, where North Dakota asked us to bring that in the event that they would do the same and link up with us, put a similar connection across their state. So this is a project, one of 18 that we currently have in the queue. There's a lot of demand for places to ride for off-road touring vehicles and no place to go. So this will relieve some of the pressure and also get the ball rolling on some of these other projects. This project itself has been vetted over the course of the last several years with two public listening sessions all the way across the route. The first one was designed to with a wide footprint to ask in the northern third of the state where they think a project like this should be aligned. And the second was, and both of these happened about the same time this year, in previous years, 2017 and 2016. Last year we came back and narrowed the alignment and fine-tuned. We're still doing that kind of work. Our administrator is still meeting with local governments along the way. Where we have been asked to move the alignment by a township or had objections, we've done so. Where we've been asked by a county to move the alignment, we have done so. So we want you to know that this is a group, if you look in the bill, The bill also funds a master plan. No other organization that I know of has done that. We want to do this right. We're going to be knocking on a lot of doors in this phase two side of things of local governments, and we want to show them that we're serious and that we have credibility in what we're doing. And the third component would be the maintenance fund. In that first round of hearings, and we continue to hear from local governments, especially the townships, that you're going to be putting more volume on those low volume roads that we don't put any money into. What happens if they get beat up? How many new units can we expect to be seeing down those roads? We don't have the answer to that. But our answer is we'll put a fund together in some criteria, and that you can, if you can show and demonstrate that those impacts are from the additional volume from the B2B, you can access those funds. We don't know if $200,000 is enough. We don't know if it's too much, but it's in the bill. So, Mr. Chair, we're excited. This is something new for the state. It taps in to what the DNR is wanting with new organizations and diverse groups to recreate in the outdoors. So it hits a lot of notes. And we're just pleased to, again, with Representative Eklund's willingness to carry the bill.
Ms. Hinckley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate this opportunity to be here today. My name is Angela Hinckley. I'm the co-founder of a local nonprofit organization called Ladies Rock Off-Road Club, and I'm also the public relations director for the Minnesota Four-Wheel Drive Association. You may be surprised to see a woman here today representing the off-road community, but according to recent market research, about 40% of the national off-road community is now made up of women. I'm proud to be here today to represent our local women of the off-road community. Our club was founded 2 years ago, and we currently are at 700 members and growing. We're mothers and grandmothers, daughters and sisters, wives and friends. We're made up of individuals, couples, and families who all have a common shared passion for the sport of off-roading. Overall, as a community, we're greatly misunderstood. We promote and encourage responsible recreating. One of the many things that the Ladies Rock Off-Road Club does is empower and educate women about their vehicles, legal and ethical off-highway driving, and safe recovery. We do this through partnerships with local businesses to teach and lead hands-on classes and demonstrations. We've also recently started teaching and training the Tread Lightly principles with other local clubs. We have materials and education for our trail kids, which are the children of our members, to teach safety and ethics at an early age. Everywhere we go and recreate, we strive to leave no impact to the trails and environment. We host trail cleanup days, and we're also in the process of adopting a highway. We always find ways to give back to the communities that we recreate in, whether we're volunteering our time or donating goods. In addition to that, we buy gas, food, supplies, camping, hotels, and other accommodations in the areas that we recreate. We build confidence in women and help them accomplish things that they never thought they could do. From conquering an obstacle or making a vehicle repair, we coach and support as a community every step of the way. For us, this is so much more than just driving our vehicle through the woods. Our community is always looking for new opportunities to ride, new trails to be on. The border-to-border touring route is a great concept for the whole family to enjoy. We are very excited to have this new trail right in our backyard, and we take pride in this trail. We want to do this right, which is why we support this bill to manage the off-road vehicle trails.
Any questions for the testifier? Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify? Oh, looks like we got a couple. He's going to come.
Okay.
Mr. O'Rourke.
Sorry, I had something in the back of my throat there.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity to testify. I will make this brief. I represent Citizens for Sustainable Off-Roading, and they have some concerns about Representative Eklund's bill. Capital Rourke, Mr. Chair. The border-to-border route still, as Mr. Larson said, does not have a final alignment, although through this, and he did address this, at least one county and three townships have addressed concerns and asked them not to go through, and they have. To Mr. Larson's credit, they have moved those routes. One of the concerns that these townships have addressed is that these roads are already publicly accessible for vehicles to use in a sustainable and dispersed manner. Creating a signal-designated route mapped and signed that targets will move more of these vehicles onto that single route as opposed to all the other publicly accessible roads that they currently can use. This concern was noted by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife in a letter that they sent to the DNR where it was highlighted that this will have greater impact of on the surrounding wetlands and exceptional waterways that the current route is expected to pass through. There's also concern about the fund that this bill tends to use to do maintenance. The ORV fund was specifically designated to pull money from the gas tax and to be used for parks and trails that were not going to be public roads because the riders of these were not intended to be on public roads. Making this change to use the maintenance for public roads has some of the locals concerned, and we frankly do not feel that the $200,000 to be used over the course of the 900-mile route over a three-year span is going to be adequate. We also feel that putting the burden of proof on the local units of government to determine that these vehicles are the cause of the maintenance is putting an overdue burden on these local units of government, and they may in the end decide it's not worth it to figure out this data of if the maintenance is needed, if it meets the threshold, they may just let the roads go into disrepair. So that is our concerns on this bill. Thank you for your time.
Any questions for the testifier? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Citizens for Sustainable Off-Roading, what describe their membership for me, would you please? I'm not familiar with them.
Yeah, they're Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, they are a coalition of citizens in northern Minnesota, and they have some former elected officials, and they reached out with concerns about this route.
Representative Fabian. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are they off-road? Are they ATV owners and riders, or what are they?
Some of them are ATV owners and riders. But to clarify, I don't know how many of them are highway licensed off-road participants.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. O'Rourke, so you're talking about Clearwater County and some townships and so forth, and you're representing the Citizens for Sustainable Off-Roading. What conversations have you personally had with Clearwater County or the townships that you're naming?
Mr. O'Rourke.
I have not had a conversation with them, Mr. Representative Fabian.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, can you name the townships that have confided in you that they're just going to let the roads go to pieces? Seriously.
No, Mr. Chair and Representative Lewick, no.
Well, that statement you made that you're just going to let the roads go, I find that pretty disconcerting, and not our townships are a lot better than that. If they got an issue, they will certainly reach out and resolve it. But I think I hope the group you represent take a good hard look at what you said here a little while ago about local units of government, because I think you were way out of line.
Mr. Chair and Representative Luke, the townships that did vote to have this route go around them, one of the main concerns they all brought up was the fact that they were not going to be able to properly determine that if there was degradation to these roads, that they were not going to be able to determine that it came from this route. And they said they expressed
concerned about maintaining their roads as is, and so their concern was that they would not be able to properly associate any damage from this, and that's why they asked it to go around. But I, Representative Lewick, I understand your concern about my comment to the townships and the inference that townships would simply let their roads go unmaintained was misstated on my part.
Representative Lewick.
And to give you a little background, last time I counted, I got like 91 townships in the district that I represent. And not every township accepts, a rare exception, accepts ATV use on township roads. They have to pass a special or local ordinance that says no. But, I mean, it's like less than 1% out of them. I mean, it's a couple townships. So I can understand that. How many townships are there north of Grand Rapids? I mean, more than a couple. So that's their prerogative if they've got an issue with a group to bow out, and the same with a county. But I don't think a single county in three townships is a fair representation. I spent some time up at Gilbert, Minnesota, and some other places, and this is a growing recreational situation, and I know you represent some group of those folks. I'm a little bit surprised, because frankly, this looks like a positive step forward with a group that's willing to be accountable for their recreation. I just want to make it clear to Representative Eklund, I do support this, and that's, you know, the beauty of this is that all those local units of government can make up their own mind, but let's not just hold up a couple and say, well, we're not going to do this. Thank you.
Got Representative Sundin and then Representative Higgin.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifier, I just shared a quick story with you about back in the late 70s and 80s when those three-wheelers came out, and then the four-wheelers, a bunch of hooligans out in the woods tearing up public lands and private lands as well. And the result of that was Minnesota Power on their properties along the waterways up in northern Minnesota. They just posted them, no motorized vehicles. And the state clamped down on people tearing through the woods, helter-skelter through the woods. I was one of those guys, to tell you the truth. So now we've got a trail systems being developed, you know, for recreational purposes to keep hooligans like me from tearing up public lands. And I think now that I'm all grown up, I think it's a good thing. So I really commend the author and this whole effort to get ahead of the issue. Don't you think it behooves us to get ahead of the issue rather than react?
Mr. O'Rourke. Mr. Chair, Representative Sundin, I feel that a lot of these roads are accessible now, and these are public roads. So these, unlike trails where ATVs, four-wheelers, three-wheelers can kind of carve out their own path, these are already roads that are existent and accessible to the public. And the public has access and can use these roads. By designating that this is the trail, you are now taking all those roads and having people go to a single designated path, which if the goal is to just focus it down into one area, that would be good, but now you're taking all those, and we get these conflicting reports of it's going to have huge economic impact into rural Minnesota, and then we also get it's not going to be that many vehicles. And so if it's going to have a huge economic impact and going to be a lot of vehicles, now you're talking about a significant increase in the usage of roads that are frankly not used that often. So that's in there lies some of our concerns.
I understand your concerns, but I still go back to appreciating that there's a structure here that we're working off of and a plan, to repair roads and maintain roads properly for this purpose. So I really do appreciate the fact that there's a plan in place. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Eklund and Mr. Larson, I'm not familiar with the Citizens for Sustainable Off-Roading Mr. O'Rourke stated that they're, I think, a group of citizens from northern Minnesota. I don't get too much further north than International Falls and Roseau. I'm curious to know if Representative Eklund and Mr. Larson have had any knowledge of or contact with the Citizens for Sustainable Off-Road, off-roading previous to now, and what your discussions have been like.
Under Mr. Larson.
Representative Fabian, Mr. Chair, over the summer, this is an issue that cropped up, and we dealt it mostly in the Cook County area, the Grand Marais area. About this time last year, the issue cropped up in Clearwater County. Clearwater County took its, I want the committee to, I'm going to reiterate this, when Cook County took its position in opposition, we, as an organization, we said, well, we honor that. We think it's misguided, and we want to keep talking to you. But instead of, initially it was, we're in opposition to the initial alignment. Okay, we'll go through your county on blacktop roads. A few months later, that position was clarified to say, no, we don't want you coming through our county in any way, shape, or form. In that regard, we took a look at the alignment and said, instead of going across the state, and this gets back to, we want to be good citizens and we want to be good neighbors. We are not going to invest in this brand new system in areas that were not welcome. And so the decision was made, instead of going in a linear route across the state, the new alignment calls for going above Red Lake to accommodate Clearwater County and their opposition to the route going through on blacktop legal highways with highway licensed vehicles. We made that commitment to the local governments that we work with. We're going to be good neighbors in the areas that we recreate. If you look in your packets, in the areas where this group has 10 years of service and have been recreating for 10 years in Gilbert and Appleton, you're not going to find one elected official, local, law enforcement, business owner, or elected official that's going to say a negative thing about this. We have a business owner and a county commissioner in both of those areas that will say positive things to us in any one of these forums. So we've earned that. And so when the township says we're a little nervous about this, we accommodate them by going around. And that's an ongoing thing. This alignment is not set in stone. If somebody says down the road it's not working out, we'll fix it. We think the townships and Clearwater County in a year or two are going to come back. They're going to be looking over the fence and saying, maybe we were wrong. And we're going to keep working with them on that. But we're going to do it in the right way. We will not burn bridges on this project. Ms. Hinckley brought it up. This is a group that is misunderstood. When you think about off-road vehicles, there's an image that pops into every one of your heads, and it's big, aggressive tires. This group is 95% Jeeps and Land Rovers. The growing side of this, she has 700 members in her girls' club, in her women's rock club. So this is a good group. I'm proud to be working with them, and this is the first cornerstone of a system that down the road you're going to look back on tonight and say you were part of that.
President Eklund.
Representative Fabian, to answer your question, originally I heard from some of the folks that belong to Mr. O'Rourke's club from Cook County, one of the counties I represent. Since my having conversations with them and other members of Cook County, I have not heard anything recently from them. So I think they're going about this the right way. Well, and if I could add, Mr. Chair, I probably have about 100 letters of support in a file, if anybody wants to see them, from all across the state.
So I've got Representative Lee and then Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just a request from Mr. O'Rourke. I think it will help the committee members if you could provide us a list of the township or the townships that you mentioned that have voted in opposition to this. I think that will help us.
Yep, I have that list, and I'll give that to the committee staff and members.
Representative Sandell, and then Representative Claflin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I admitted once before, earlier in the session, that I've never been on an off-road vehicle, but I respect people who recognize it as a responsible sport. I get lots of letters as well, and most of the letters, I'm from the metro area, right in the southeast metro area, and most of the letters I get is stop the border-to-border trail. And but I've read this letter, and I want to be supportive of the bill. But the things that pop up in my mind are the same ones that you mentioned. When someone says, well, we're going to have off-road vehicles on these roads, are we going to be able to protect tribal lands? Are we going to be able to protect wetlands and lakes? Are we going to have to buy kind of pressure landowners to cooperate? And who's going to pay attention to law enforcement? I hope you understand that my question is not aggressive. I want to be able to support it.
Representative Sandell, so these are legal licensed vehicles, and for the most part, they're going to be on township or county and some state roads. I mean, if you look at some of the groups, some of these people have Escalades and Lincolns that they're going to be taking on these roads. So it's not, they're not out ripping up the countryside. They just want to be able to tour across the state of Minnesota.
Mr. Chair and members, in all due respect, we don't have to ask anybody to ride on these roads. These are highway licensed vehicles on legal roads. We pay a gas tax. It's out of being good neighbors and for the long term that we're doing this. So I appreciate where you're coming from. I think I understand where they're coming from. I mean, I got on part of this first part of the trail up in Cook County just to see what it was, and I'm a city kid. Yeah, bouncing around out there, and trees make me nervous. So my wife loved it, and I told the group, you know, God bless you. I'll help you with the bill, not for me, but she told me we're buying a Jeep. So she's the next member in Angela's group.
Representative Claflin.
Thank you, Chair. I have some questions about the second page of the bill with the reimbursement. How would you go about determining if the damage had been caused by additional traffic from the border-to-border trail?
Well, there's, Mr. Chair, remember, there's criteria, mm-hmm. and that language for that criteria came from working with the townships. So that language came from townships, just so you know. I don't know if that answers your question or not.
Representative Claflin.
It would help if that was provided to the committee, what those criteria would be. I have further questions about some of the funding that it would require demonstrating that a 50% increase in maintenance cost for the roads was because of the border-to-border trail. That's beginning on 2.19. That seems like a high bar to cross. Just from what I'm sort of presuming about road maintenance costs, that a 50% increase is a large increase to be eligible for any reimbursement. And further down on line 2.29, the claim has to be consistent with claims made by other entities. If there's any criteria of what similar to other entities would be, that would be helpful to understand. And across the whole proposed route, you have communities that are very different, that are going to have very different issues on their roads. So saying that it must be similar to other claims also seems like a high bar. If you could speak to some of the requirements to be eligible for reimbursement, that would help.
Mr. Chair, Representative, again, this is language that we worked out. This language was in the omnibus last year and got vetoed. So this is our second run at this. This language was in that bill. We worked this out with the townships. We spent a lot of time with them. So, again, this is language that they've signed off on. We didn't have a base to work from on this, so we're making this up. And so the only way we can do that is by doing public outreach and then putting language together that meets any conditions that, you know, come up during those conversations. That's what's reflected in the bill, Representative. I'm not sure what else to say about the bar and all that. It's just if it doesn't work, we can fix it. I mean, it's kind of a living, like I said, like the alignment. We'll be coming back on this. If something doesn't work, we'll fix it.
Representative Claflin.
And would roads that are nearby but perhaps not on the marked route be eligible for funding? If it's shown that there is additional traffic from off-road vehicles causing damage, are roads that are not part of the marked trail eligible for this reimbursement?
Representative, Mr. Chair, no.
Thank you.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to say to Representative Eklund and the testifier there is I appreciate the thought that you've been putting in on this. You know, some of the concerns I heard was from people saying, well, we don't want it here or there, and I appreciate the fact that you folks are doing a lot of great due diligence out there, finding out who wants to work with you to do this and who doesn't. One of the things that, as I was hearing it, it kind of reminded me a little bit that this is probably going to be like kind of like a signed marked trail that goes through, and it reminded me a little bit of the Lewis and Clark trail system that I see through the state and the one up to the Mississippi headwaters. And, you know, I see the value in that. There are people who could see going through there. I know that there are some concerns about how the funding is, and I hear that you folks are saying, let's start here, let's talk to locals, figure out what it looks like. And what I'm hearing is a willingness to continue the discussion, figure out as this system develops, how do we address it, how do we fund it properly going forward. And that was my initial concern coming in, is, you know, hearing that support. And because I hear that support out there, that you folks want to work together, put together a system that makes sense to me as having a nice system that people can use across the state, I can see that this is a worthwhile bill and one that I can support. So thank you for the work you're doing on it, and thank you for the outreach that you're doing to the local community. So often that gets missed, and I appreciate your dedication to that area.
Is there anyone else in the audience that wants to testify? Anyone else? I have a question. Oh, Representative Fabian.
I don't have a question. I just, when this bill was around last year, we put it into our bill, and it was vetoed. There was an article in the Off-Road magazine, and the authors of the bill in there were referred to as the coolest dudes in the legislature. So I just want Representative Eklund and those folks that... I can show it to you if you want.
I had a question about, so if we're moving across the state, we're crossing the Continental Divide, and we spend a lot of discussion here on either aquatic invasive species or terrestrial invasive species. So moving on the trails, and we pick up a critter and transfer it out of the Superior watershed over into the Red River Valley watershed or vice versa, and depending, and again I have to look at the map, but maybe even it's three watersheds. So what precautions are there for is there a requirement for washdown, or is there any that's a question I have on dealing with we're spending this whole discussion on boat cleaning. What do we do with terrestrial or AIS with equipment?
Mr. Chair, members, on the washdowns, I'm not sure. But just overall, off-highway vehicle organizations have what's called trail ambassadors. Trail ambassadors are out there for the safety of those that are using the trail. And we're also on the lookout for things like invasive species, so that when we're out there, unlike pedal bikers or walkers or other groups, We have trail ambassadors on the trail that we put money into and fund. So I just want to let the committee know that we have that aspect. I'm not sure about the washdowns. You know, there's, you know, I don't know where you would get a hose. So I'm not sure.
Well, perhaps in the communities you're going through, there might be facilities just like their boat wash. I think it's an actual issue. I don't know if DNR's thought of that or.
I don't mean to diminish anything, Mr. Chair. Just there's probably an answer that I don't know. I'll find out.
Okay. Any other testifiers? Any other questions? Representative Eklund, any closing remarks?
Well, I think this is a good opportunity for a group that's growing in the state. And our administrator of this project, Ron Potter, is a retired DNR employee. He knows his way around how to build trails and maintain trails. So I think it's we have a good person in charge. And I like the part of having the money there that townships and counties could apply for. I think it's a good start. I think it's a well-thought-out plan. So I appreciate the support, Mr. Chair.
Representative Eklund renews his motion that House File 1454 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. The bill is laid over.
Thank you.
Next up, we have House File 850, Wildlife Disease Surveillance and Response Funding Provided, Money Appropriated. Chair Hanson, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I would move to take House File 850 from the table and move it to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee.
Chair Hanson moves House File 850 as previously amended from February 21st. 2019 and recommends it be referred to Ways and Means. Representative Hanson, please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. This, when it was originally introduced, was last year's CWD appropriations, I think in February. We amended it to include the new appropriate recommendations from the governor, which have been sustained in the supplemental budget. In addition, we also added the research dollars to go to from the Game and Fish Fund to the Commissioner of Natural Resources for deer management research, and that would be the University of Minnesota. So I'm asking to move this to Ways and Means so that we would have something ready to go relating to funding for CWD.
Are there questions from the committee?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Excuse me. So, Representative Hanson, one of the issues that I raised earlier was, you know, rather than taking money from the general fund, and we had the LCCMR bill here earlier today, I'm just curious to get your perspective why you wouldn't think that this would be a good use for LCCMR funding.
Chair Hanson.
Madam Chair and Representative Fabian, I'd go back to kind of what we talked about last night with the aquatic invasive species, that when you go with the LCCMR, you can start it, but you have to keep coming back. And I would like to find some consistent funding for not only the research, but the CWD response. And I also just I think that my personal opinion is I just don't think the LCCMR is the right place for that particular appropriation.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I would have been, I mean, I'm supportive of what we're doing, but I just would have been way more comfortable if we'd even taken a portion from the LCCMR. I thought that would have been a better way to get going. And, you know, as being chair, you've got a few pennies to work with, and it would probably create a little more flexibility for you, but that's your decision. So thank you.
Chair Hanson.
Madam Chair and Representative Fabian, I am as with any potential LCCMR project, the university can also apply, as can anyone else, for research projects, and we're in the middle of that. Not in the middle, but we're nearing the end of that RFP. There was the pre-proposal stage, but still has not finalized that.
Are there other questions from the committee? Is there anyone in the audience who'd like to testify for or against the bill? Seeing none. Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the problems when you sit on the corner of the table, just would request a roll call.
A roll call has been requested. Chair Hansen, do you have any closing remarks?
Madam Chair and members, I would ask for your support. We're moving this one out. We also may have this in an omnibus bill as well.
Representative Hansen renews his motion that House File 850 as amended be recommended to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those, the clerk will take the roll.
Hansen.
Yes.
Claflin.
Yes.
Fabian.
Yes.
Backer.
Yes.
Becker-Finn.
Yes.
Eklund.
Yes.
Fisher.
Yep.
Green. Heintzman. Lee.
Yes.
Lewick.
Yes.
Morrison. Nelson. Purcell. Sandel.
Yes.
Sundin.
Yes.
Tice.
Yes.
Wagenius.
With 13 ayes, the motion passes. Prevails. Ridiculous. Chair Hansen, is there any other business?
No. You're the chair. You get to decide.
All right, we are adjourned.